The chatty room.
Did you read the? Did you play around with that visual search thing?
No, I have not.
You should before you show screenshots, or you could play around with it while you're giving the screenshots because it's really cool.
All right.
Also, the lead-in to that story is going to be the Google video search. And that one, if you properly want to show, you're going to need to choose a video. I chose animals because it's got tigers in it. But it's in that part that says try the API. Well, let me know when you get there. Otherwise, it's not going to make any sense.
Let me see. Wait, where are you at?
I am looking at the link on line 21.
Oh, okay, that one. Okay. I thought for some reason I was looking at the news story. It's like, wait a minute. Let's select a video to annotate.
Yeah. You can select either one. It really doesn't matter. But you do have to select one if you want to show anything interesting.
So, select a video sample to annotate.
Oh, he's in the dock. So, that's good. I see Scott in the dock.
Am I picking the right one here?
Show me what you got.
Wait, is this just explaining the video?
No, yeah, so it's a little confusing. So the video that's playing, what you're watching is the AI go through the API and tag it. So click shots. And you could see like, oh, it thinks sitting is a good label for this scene. It's picking all of those. Now it thinks motor vehicle, right? And then when you go back to labels, once it's done, it'll start showing those labels up there. But shots is actually the better scene because you can see it figuring it out.
Oh, here, right here. They don't have sitting. It just said sitting.
Yeah, go back to shots. There we go. Eyelash, lip, nose, cheek, chin. Sitting. How is that the best label for her? Ooh, vehicle.
I don't think she's sitting.
Electronic component. She might be standing, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like a standing table.
Yeah, yeah.
Her posture doesn't indicate sitting.
But see, that's the cool thing to look at. Oh, Scott texted me. Be right there. There.
Interesting.
There, there, there.
And so you basically so you can drop this into whatever your...
Yeah, so the idea is you can do visual XML search. Script. Yeah. And like if you have a bunch of videos on your app and you want, like, show me dog videos, it would find all the dog videos and show them to you. Show me cat videos.
To try the API, let me see. How do we go back and choose a different video?
I don't know. Just reload the page, I guess, probably. Yeah. Yeah, because the other one's got tigers. Are you sure you're not a robot? Are you
Which one is, says tiger? Oh, animals.
Animals.
That's a zebra at, or not a zebra, a giraffe butt.
And scenes from Zootopia.
I didn't like that movie as much as I thought I would. Oh, I wonder if they put human. Saw wildlife. Tourist test. Nature. El tigre. Luchador.
Le tigre. Dolomite.
Oh, those elephants are old.
Oh, they're all wrinkly.
No, you can tell by their foreheads. They're like old people. When they get, they're like, you know, the skin starts to hang off them.
Just like me and you.
I like to, that's why I'm trying to get fat again, so my face fills out. My skin can't sag.
They'll smooth out your wrinkles. You can just grow a beard.
Grow a beard all around my face. Face, hair. Cut Kurt Neat Powell. That sounds like a made up name. Oh, nice.
I'm going to start a broadcast while we do this.
Cool. And then what was the next thing you were warning about me about?
Oh, hello. We're live. The other thing was that, oh, you should go through search.descartelab.com there on line 24. That's some fun stuff. Let me tell you.
Ah, yes.
That's the main topic right there. You can find all the poultry farms in America.
So how do I just do a, do I just search for anything?
You can use one of the ones on the popular searches. Just click on solar farms, for instance.
But what if I wanted to do like a specific item?
You could do that. But for illustrative purposes, the ones they've populated are going to be the better ones.
How do you do a search?
Huh?
Like popular searches, or do people just...
Oh, no, the way you actually do a search is you click on something. So, hey, Scott Johnson, we're live.
Sorry about that.
Let me go to these islands here.
Yeah, so you could click... Like, I clicked on my neighborhood I grew up in Greenville, and it found similar neighborhoods. That was kind of interesting.
Man.
How you doing, Scott?
Oh, busy, crazy afternoon. I apologize.
No problem.
I didn't even realize what time it was. You texted me. I was still outside. I was like, gosh, dang it.
You were outside sleeping. I get it. It's fine. It's fine.
Oh, you know me. I like to sleep in the cold.
Yeah. You and Rainer just hanging out.
Stupid dog.
Man, that would be the life. Well, settle in. Buckle up. We're going to talk about tech news for a daily show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's see. Find out everything I need to on this end. I have.
Wait, how do I search then? Do I just click on stuff?
Zoom in on something.
I did zoom in on something.
Well, you got to zoom into you're too far zoomed in. See, the Landsat one's hard because it's only got 15 meter availability.
So but like I'm clicking on the airport runway.
Yeah, all right, fine. Go to the US one. Ah, where'd you go?
Which map?
To aerial imagery. This one works better. Now zoom in until you find something interesting.
I want to find a target.
All right.
Ooh, this runway seems kind of cool.
Now you can click on stuff.
All right.
The Landsat one doesn't work so good. There you go.
I want to see the one person. Ooh, I wonder if it does planes.
That's it. It's not centered properly on the plane. That's weird. It is meant for land features, permanent features, but.
Will it?
It is finding other airports, though, looks like.
Some of that AI in action.
Yeah. Zoom, enhance.
Wait, how do I select something else? How do I get this red dot off here?
Oh, the red dot's just there. That's to guide you. Just click somewhere else. And but the other thing that's cool is it will tell you, do that. See, it'll tell you like, oh, we found four other instances of an image that looks just like that one elsewhere in the U.S. And they're over there on the map in the upper left.
I want to catch the one nudist on the beach and clicking on him or her.
If you do, then you find all the nudists on the beach.
Yeah, I'll tell you where they all are. All right, you guys ready?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's do this.
Oh, wait, I need control before you do anything.
You have control.
Do I? Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, I do.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing that.
All right.
All right, here we go.
Daily Tech News Show is powered by its audience, not outside organizations. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, March 7th, 2017. I'm Tom Merritt. Actually, it's March 8th, 2017. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me today, Mr. Scott Johnson alongside. How's it going, Scott?
Hey man, I'm good. I'm all switched on and switched off and using a Switch a lot. I don't have a better way of saying I like the Switch a lot.
We have been talking about the Switch a lot on the show. So before people start emailing and complaining, we're not going to talk about it today. Much. Yeah. We actually have one.
Not story. A word. It's the only
we,
reference.
We have one story about it, but we're not going to go on and on about, like, you know, how awesome we like it if we do or complain. There are things that are wrong with it. But yeah, it seems like everybody in the DTNS crew, not everybody, but almost all of us are playing the Switch and liking it. It's interesting.
Yeah, we I think quite a few of us picked it up, and I think quite a few of us are pretty happy with it.
I'm surprisingly pleased with it. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I picked it up to evaluate it, not because I was excited about it particularly. I was a little skeptical, but yeah, it actually works really well.
I went in very skeptical. I came out very surprised. So yeah. Let's see if they can maintain that over more than just a few days.
Well, that is not our main topic, though. We're going to talk about visual search. We've got a couple of different stories to talk about. Space archaeology, the ability to just click on an image and find every other image that looks like it in the world and what that could do for science. And video search API from Google. But let's start with the top stories. A source told TechCrunch that Tinder operates a members-only version of its dating service. The source was not me. I'm not a member. The service is for celebrities and people who do really well on Tinder, which on the morning stream we sort of decided must mean good-looking people. It's called Tinder Select. Tinder invites select people who can nominate others for inclusion, although if you're nominated by a select person, you don't get to nominate anyone else. They put a hard stop on that. You have to be invited in by Tinder to be able to nominate people. App has a different design, including blue instead of orange, an S for select instead of the Tinder logo. I don't know. We talked a lot about this on TMS this morning, Scott, but it is a very interesting method to moderation, to say we're just going to fully restrict the community, make it really hard to get in, and select people who are in similar high-profile situations who deal with similar problems.
Yeah, it sounds like swipe E for exclusive a little bit. I mean, it's interesting. Given the fact that this isn't we talked about this morning. It's not a traditional social network in the Facebook sort of way where you can have special features or a place where only invite only sort of happens to people. It's not that. It's for dating. It's still for trying to find significant others. It's that sort of thing. And
when you say significant others, though, you got to put that all caps significant, right? This isn't just this is a very significant other.
Yeah, they need to be very significant, very exclusive, and probably just as temporary as everybody else. So anyway, I wish them luck. I think it's kind of an interesting twist into a service that is already fascinating to me, and it took a bit of a turn this week. So well done, everyone who got a key to the executive washroom. Well done.
I don't think Cinderella likes it. That's all I'm going to say.
Sources tell Bloomberg's Mike Gurman
Mark
that the Nest is developing a version of its learning thermostat for launch next year and is selling for less than $200, or will sell for less than that. The current device is $249. It's also working on remote sensors to let users control the temperature of individual rooms. Nest is also working on a home security alarm that should be shipping this year, and works with a key fob, a small doorbell, and a video camera for next year, and a new version of its indoor security camera coming this autumn, which should recognize particular people. And I don't know about you, Tom, but hearing that Nest is got all sorts of new things in the oven is exciting to me. I like to hear they have new stuff on the way.
If you're way into smart home devices, none of these sound that crazy, right? It's like, guess what? There have been smart doorbells from a lot of good companies out for years. Welcome to the party. The home alarm system with the key fob, not crazy new either. Certainly the video camera that could recognize individual people is taking some more cutting edge vision recognition and implementing it. None of these are blowing me away. What is exciting, though, like you say, is Nest, which before Tony Fadell left had a very good design sense. Since Tony Fadell left, hasn't really put out any new products, maybe showing a pulse. And if you're somebody who did like the Nest design ethos and the way their stuff worked, because that was kind of what was good about Nest, was, well, sure, lots of people make a smart thermostat, but this one's really easy to use and it's really well designed. Hopefully that ethos persists. So my thoughts on this are, hearing that they're coming out with a bunch of these products means, okay, they're not dead as a company. I kind of didn't think they would. I figured they'd come out with new products eventually. But hearing, but I want to see that they still have that Nest design advantage before I buy in. The key fob for the security thing kind of intimates that they are still focused on ease of use.
Sure. I agree with that all 100%. And just moreover, I would add, this is Nest. This is a name we used to associate with smart homes, with Internet of Things, with a lot of that early cutting edge stuff. This name was synonymous with that stuff. And then it went crazy and there was an avalanche and these guys got bought and sold and bought and kind of sat there with Google for a while and just didn't seem to be making much noise. And I started to think, well, they're the Diamond Rio of MP3 players. They just are not, going to do anything else. And that's okay. They innovated. They made a mark. Now it's somebody else's turn, but maybe not. Maybe they're back.
Yeah, Google bought them. They were part of Google for a while. There was a lot of confusion over what they were doing and who was in charge and what Tony Fadell did. And then Tony Fadell finally left. They spun them out into their own company under Alphabet. So they're still part of what was Google, which is now called Alphabet. It's a whole corporate restructuring thing that makes some people's head hurt. But essentially, it's still owned by the same company that bought it. But now it can exist independently of Google and do its own thing. But Tony Fadell's not in charge. So I think a lot of people have been wondering what was going to happen with it. And we still don't know. All we know is that Mark Gurman, who's really good at finding sources to tell him things before they happen, says they got a bunch of new products in the hopper. So we'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah. Weirdly, they're just a business still and they're making things. That's basically where we're at.
Yes, well put. Apple said its analysis of the CIA exploits that were released on WikiLeaks indicate that many of the exploits have already been patched. And this goes with a lot of the things I've been seeing. Bruce Schneier seems to think these are fairly old dump. There was a Reuters story saying that they had a source who told them that law enforcement was aware of this leak last fall. So this is not news to law enforcement, and that they are older tools, not a current set of tools, and they're looking at contractors as being the source of the leak. Anyway, Apple said it's going to continue to look at these exploits and will continue to work to address any identified vulnerabilities that haven't been patched if they find them. Samsung and Microsoft both said they're looking into the releases. They didn't say much else. We haven't heard much from the Linux Foundation or Google about this. As for potential vulnerabilities, a little more to add from what we knew yesterday. The Samsung TV exploit requires physical access to the TV. Remember, we mentioned it was a credential thing that could lead to being able to spy on you. Well, you have to use a USB stick to implement the vulnerability described in WikiLeaks, which means breaking into someone's house, which means you could just go ahead and bug them while you're in there. It might be easier. So there's also a bunch of the vulnerabilities that were purchased, that were vulnerabilities that were available on the dark web markets, so to speak, not developed by the CIA. And that's led a lot of people to say, oh, so they could pretend to be other people, which is true. Anybody who uses malware can try to say, oh, look, that malware came from another source. That's not usually how researchers determine the source of a hack. They don't just look at the malware and decide because it's written in Cyrillic it came from Russia.
It also seems like there was a lot of open source stuff that was in part of the leaks, a lot of code that people saw snippets of and went, oh, I know what that is. Part of such and such library. And so those things are both easily recognized, patched, in some cases already patched vulnerabilities for, or in the case of, I don't know, the internet getting seeded with the ability to now, hunt down people with these vulnerabilities. It's weird how a leak like this can actually aid in that stuff stopping rather than it not ever coming to light. So I find this entire thing over the last couple of days pretty fascinating. And I wonder if everybody will be as quick as Apple to sort of address specific vulnerabilities that maybe apply to their product or their particular platform.
I mean, that's the story here to me. Unusually responsive and forthcoming Apple regarding these leaks versus other companies that are still kind of holding back and investigating. I hope that means that they're right, that they didn't miss anything.
Yeah, they seem to, I don't know. They like to plant their flag on something like this, and they seem to be out in front of it. At the Open Compute Project Summit, Microsoft is showing off the version of its Windows Server OS, and this is running on Qualcomm Centric 2400. This is an ARM-based chip designed for cloud servers. The project is for Microsoft's internal use on cloud servers, and there's no word on whether or if not it would even be available for anyone else. It's not even running open any, or sorry, on any customer-facing Microsoft services yet, though the server design called Project Olympus is open source.
Yeah, so Intel's involved in this. Other people like, I can't remember all the chip makers who were involved in the Project Olympus open source project are still on board. This doesn't mean Microsoft ditched Intel for this kind of project, but running on an ARM-based chip is something a lot of folks have been pushing. It hasn't got as much traction as some people thought it would, but the ability to use the same kind of processor that's in your phone to run a server bank is particularly attractive to people because of cost and power efficiency and things like that. So Microsoft, the number two cloud provider with Azure, coming out and saying, yeah, we've got an internal cloud version of our own Windows server running on ARM. We're showing it off. The design of the server is open. Anybody can try it. And we might. They're now finally saying we might use this in one of our cloud services. They haven't actually decided that. That's not an announcement they're making, but they are sort of saying, yeah, we're working on it internally, and we could.
Yeah, it's funny how my brain always hears ARM and just thinks mobile chips. I just can't get away from it.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, that's nothing what it's for, to do with mostly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. These low power, high performance, low heat, you know, all that sort of things jump to my head, and I'm thinking, why are they testing a cloud-based OS on?
Well, think about it, though. It's not that crazy, right? Just make the next step, right? You're on the right track, which is, well, imagine, and this is not how they do it, but imagine a bank of smartphones instead of a bank of servers. Mm-hmm. And think of, oh, well, I could put so many more in there. They use so much less power, and they're so efficient. Now you see the appeal, right?
Oh yeah, and then you can roll out updates in a way that you can't do. Well, you can do more efficiently and perhaps less expensively than a rack full of, you know, server formatted servers that always need upkeep and change out. Like it is definitely a different way of thinking. These are normally devices in people's pockets, but yet they're powerful, and especially in great numbers, they're very powerful, and they're again low power, high efficiency.
Yeah,
just imagine a rack full of phones and. Boom, you've got a massive computing farm.
Silverblade, is that a server in your pocket? Is that a server farm in your pocket? Because you don't actually need the screen and all the other stuff, right? If you just need the server, it could be even smaller. While I've got Scott talking about chips, let's keep it going. NVIDIA launched the Jetson TX2 Tuesday, designed to run twice as fast as the TX1 and drawing less than 7.5 watts. Talk about your power efficiency. Jetson TX2 is an AI platform meant for embedded systems like UAVs, aka drones and quadcopters, things like that. Robots, smart cameras. It's low power, low size, can be embedded into mobile devices that are really mobile, like they can fly. It can be used for things like navigation, image and speech recognition. Cisco's going to use it in video conferencing, so it can do some image recognition, screen capturing, stuff like that. A company called Fellow Robots is going to use it for tracking store inventory. MIT is using it for the vision-based algorithms in its MIT drone. Pre-orders for the carrier board and module combo. So this is not just the module. A lot of folks want to build their own stuff, just want the module. You have to buy the carrier board module combo first. That's available in Europe and the US now for $599 and shipping March 14th. So you only have to wait a week, not even. The module-only version of the TX2 is going to cost you $400, and that's coming sometime in Q2.
So, you know, once again, the company we associate with something else doing something pretty cool. Obviously, there is a huge, expansive market that's unfolding every day in small, discrete chip-based solutions to AI processing and other functionality that isn't necessarily going to be laid at the feet of core processors and things like that. I think that's really cool, but it's yet another one of those new NVIDIA things that really none of us are going to know is in there for the most part. I mean, we're going to hear stories like this, but we're not going to know that this new camera we got has anything to do with NVIDIA or that the company we rely on to make sure I can push as many polygons as I can in a game like Skyrim, a special edition is also, you know, making discrete chips for a refrigerator that needs to be smart enough to know what I pulled out of it last night. So I love it when these kind of companies start to dig into other places, and it shows a lot of, I don't know, forward thinking about what the future is and less reliance on your current market.
Yeah, this is not going to be news for a lot of people, what I'm about to say. But if you're not really into chips, and you still think along the lines of, well, it's Intel and I guess AMD and NVIDIA does graphics cards, there's a new landscape out there. Intel is still very strong, but it's trying to find its next product market. It's still desktop and laptop chip heavy. AMD is making a play back with Ryzen, and it's also got a decent graphic card, but it's just trying to get back in competition with Intel in a market that is probably diminishing. NVIDIA is forging ahead with supercomputer chips, these kind of micro modules and things like that. Qualcomm has, you know, largely dominated the smartphone and mobile device market, and it is also trying to make sure that it stays ahead of the game by working with Microsoft on these servers. So it's a very different chip landscape than it was 5, 10 years ago.
It does seem like they're it's weird, little gaps of light are appearing on as to what these manufacturers can do, and they're all jumping at it. And big guys like Intel, AMD to some degree, kind of just seem like they're standing there and not taking advantage of it. That's a perception thing. It's obviously a lot more nuanced than that, but you do get the feeling there's emerging markets and the big guys aren't necessarily jumping on. Finally, Nintendo of America, hit their head, Reggie Fils-Aimé, told the Washington Post that Nintendo is talking to a number of companies about bringing services to the Nintendo Switch, specifically companies, quote, like Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon, things that will come in time, unquote, is what he said. Fils-Aimé stressed that how you play and what games you play will continue to be Nintendo's main focus, but I think, like me and many owners of the device, we eagerly await various streaming services and other sort of media type apps to come to the Switch. And I'm sure it's coming faster than you think.
You know, Roger, our producer, asked me this yesterday when I was showing him the Switch. He said, have they said anything about Amazon, Netflix, Hulu coming? And I said, no, not that I heard of, because I hadn't read this post at that point yesterday. But my reaction at the time was like, I don't know if I really want that. I mean, they had that on the Wii U, and I almost never used it, and I was really excited about it when they launched the Wii U with that, because I'm like, oh, their TV system could be the reason to use the Wii U. With this system, I really do think of it as an in-home mobile device, right? Like, I was playing last night on my television, and then when it was time to switch over to TV, of course, I just pulled it out and kept playing. And sometimes there's nothing on the TV, and I'm just playing on the couch because it's more comfortable than sitting up and having to look at the TV. So yeah, I do watch video on my mobile device, but I don't know. I just, that screen, that mode of use just doesn't seem like the one I would choose to watch something. I would go for a fancier 1080 screen on a tablet, I think.
Oh yeah. Plus I don't think it is. I mean, I think I agree with you in terms of usage, and also you and I are weird cases. We've got a lot of devices to watch stuff. Sure. You know, make it so that we're going to have a preferable choice or whatever. If this is your only console, this is all you're planning on getting, and you don't have a Roku, you don't have other things, and you may dabble in that stuff, sure. And that probably speaks as to why this didn't launch with more of that. A lot of people have made a lot of comments about how the Switch shipped kind of half-baked when it comes to OS features. Mm-hmm. It seems to be functional, but there's not a lot of extras. There's no Miiverse. There's none of this cool stuff Nintendo usually ships with their devices. And none of these third-party apps are there either. I think that's just not a priority. I think it's going to be there. It seems like a standard. If you've got a screen and the internet, you better have Netflix, kind of. That's the world we live in now.
That's what Netflix wants, yeah.
Yeah, Netflix absolutely wants that. So I'm sure that that's coming, and they seem to indicate it here. But I'm with you. I don't know that there's any rush to, because the use case isn't necessarily there yet.
Well, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. And in fact, there's a new way to get the headlines as well in the Anchor app at anchor.fm. Lots of cool stuff on the Anchor app, actually. Annie Gauss is doing some stuff over there. Justin Robert Young, Jeff Cannata are doing stuff over there. So go check it out, anchor.fm. You can get the Daily Tech Headlines channel there. Or just subscribe if you're like, no, normal podcast is the way, at dailytechheadlines.com. That is our sister show that's just 5 minutes. So you don't have to spend as much time if you don't have the time every day. All right. At Cloud Next in San Francisco, Google announced the Video Intelligence API. That's an API that uses machine learning. TensorFlow developed it to recognize objects in videos. That means you can let the user of your app search videos for things like dog or Tiger or Flower. And they have a lovely demo where they show the API actually annotating a video. And so as they're showing scenes from Zootopia, the API is like, oh, there's animal, wildlife, zoo, terrestrial animal. Oh, wait, that's a guy. So that's a smile. That's a saw. It's figuring out the tags for you so that you can then go and search. Now, that's cool. Because when a tiger shows up, it can say tiger, it can tag that with a tiger, and then when you search tiger, it shows up the right video that has the tiger in it. But Descartes Labs in Los Alamos, New Mexico, which is founded by some astrophysicists and cosmologists from Los Alamos National Lab, are providing an AI-driven satellite image search that doesn't require labels, doesn't require tagging at all. You don't do a search by typing in a word. You just click something similar to what you want to search for. Now, their public demo is now launched. If you want to go play around with this, you can go to search.descartes.labs. That's Descartes like the philosopher, D-E-S-C-A-R-T-E-S, descarteslabs.com. Search.descarteslabs.com. And, you know, you can click on stuff. You can click on the tutorial is going to make you click on a windmill, a wind power windmill, and then show you other locations of windmills. And that could be very convenient if you're planning out energy usage. But a lot of what they want to use it for is agricultural imagery, finding planetary systems like fire risk, things like monitoring crops and feedlots. But you can use it for anything. And they're hoping by making it public, people will start to come up with stuff that they can use it for. Gadget Chaser in Slack said it reminded him of a Wired article he read from January about space archaeology. A woman named Sarah Parkak at University of Alabama, Birmingham, has been crowdsourcing the search of satellite images for visual anomalies that could lead them to finding archaeological sites. It seems like the Descartes Labs search could do that as well for her. If she said, this is what archaeological sites look like, now go search all your satellite images and find me archaeological sites. So I don't know. Did you get a chance to play around with this, Scott?
I did. I dinked around with it a little bit, and it's there's a couple of things that jumped out at me immediately. And one is that I wondered when we were going to get to a place with image recognition and AI routines that could see something and therefore find something else or match you up to something else. I wondered when it was going to get away from Facebook photos where you're in a group of 50 people and it can tell that you're all these persons' names and it auto tags you. That's neat. That's great. But it never had any real practical use for me. So I always thought that technology seems great. But when are we going to get to a place where we can use that in real world situations with object recognition? Once in a while, you'd see an experience like, I don't know, the Google search app would say, take a picture of a thing and then we'll go search for that thing using the image. And it kind of sort of didn't really work, but kind of did sometimes. And it was impressive, but you didn't use it very often. And this feels like maybe we're entering territory where this is going to be actually useful. The other thing is, it seems like it's the perfect application for it, because one thing I could complain about with both satellite imagery or even video, like the original example of video, being able to search out videos. How long have we said the problem with video is it has come up in a way that it has replaced a lot of writing? Like if you used to say, I need to fix my vacuum cleaner, I'd go on the web and look for that vacuum. And somebody would have a step-by-step little blog about how to troubleshoot this particular model of vacuum. Now you go and you do that exact same search and you get 5 or 10 YouTube videos that you have to watch. And you got to sift through sometimes a lot of bad audio, sometimes a lot of bad exposition about what you're trying to do.
Hello, and welcome to Fixing Your Vacuum. Yeah, no, I
exactly. So that alone is awesome to me. The idea that we could finally get to a place where searching for visual data is productive in a way that it hasn't been before. But certainly apply that to a much larger scope like satellite imagery. I mean, just imagine what you could do in terms of, we're trying to find out, for example, when this particular tribe of people millions of years ago left this part of Africa, where did they go next? And how will we know? Well, are there geological examples of similarities? Do we see architecturally a transition over 1,000 years where we can kind of follow where those people went, even though they changed what they did? They upgraded the way they lived. They some of those similar patterns may show up or whatever. That's fascinating. Well,
and current stuff. What this company is focusing on more is one of the reasons they did this was they were involved in analyzing satellite imagery to deal with things like hurricanes and wildfires. And what the system can do, because it's machine learning, is they can teach it, this is what a fire risk looks like. Now, go look at the latest images we get, and they want to get as close to real time as possible, which is crazy to think about, and tell us where the fire risks are. You know, we have this temperature right now, and we know that this kind of situation is bad. Where are those situations so we can go get ahead of it?
Sure. And you could track, floodplains or drought areas and say, well, this is indicative of an area that's currently experiencing drought. What are these conditions and where does it seem to be heading? Uh-oh, look out, Arizona. You got a big problem coming this spring.
Erosion,
you know.
Erosion prevention and tracking, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
That's fascinating to me. I mean, if it's like having it's like real time. I don't know, when you like put a slow speed camera on a plant and watch it grow, I feel like we're getting a kind of a weird version of that for a much larger part of our lives.
I think a lot of people think this already exists. They think because we have satellite images that we can zoom and enhance anywhere on Earth and figure out everything, you know, that the sensors in orbit will tell us, you know, when the ice caps are melting and when they're not. And that's not the way it works, but that's what these guys want to do. This is going to be a global sensor system, an AI that can look at the Earth and say, hey guys, you told me to keep an eye out for this. Well, check it out. You know, I could find this. Or I'm, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I'm planning the energy grid. I'm troubleshooting our infrastructure and I need to know where are the wind farms and where are the solar grids so that I can figure out where the gaps are and we could put more in and make a more robust infrastructure. There's so many different things you could do with this, which is why I think they're making it public so people can go in and brainstorm. The first thing I did is I went and I found Greenville, Illinois, which, by the way, the maps here, just let me digress for a moment. You have the U.S. National Agricultural Imagery Program. So that gives you the U.S. at 1 meter per pixel. It's a very good resolution, but it's only the U.S. and it's not a political map. So you can't find the borders to things on this at this point. You just have to know where stuff is. I had to like find St. Louis and then follow the interstate out until I'm like, oh yeah, there it is. There's also the PlanetScope images for China. Those are 4 or 5 meters per pixel. Still pretty good, but it's just China. And then there's the Landsat 8, which is worldwide, but that's only 15 meters per pixel, so it's kind of low res. Anyway, so I found Greenville. I found the neighborhood I grew up in. I clicked on that. And the way it works is you click on something, and then it shows you similar pictures in the left side. And so then I looked on the map, and it had showed me a bunch of little red dots of similar pictures to my neighborhood. And so I went to California, and I tried to find, well, where's the nearest neighborhood that apparently is like the neighborhood I grew up in? Just out of weirdness.
I like doing that, though. Like every time there's some kind of new mapping thing, or when Google Earth came out, or when that VR version came out a few months ago of Google Earth on the Vive, the very first thing I did was go look up where I live now, walked around the area in this weird deformed world of 3D, went and found where I was born, went to my old high school. I think it's just in us to do that, so who could blame you?
Yeah. Anyway, this check it out. If you want, go to search.descartlabs.com. We'll have the link in the show notes as well. Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. It was SP Sheridan who posted this in the subreddit today.
You think it's possible, Tom, if I found you out working in your yard on a satellite image and we could zoom and enhance that far, that it would find people that look like you standing around in their yard?
Well, it's 1 meter resolution. So at that resolution, probably not going to be very successful. Yeah. But you could find similar yards, I guess.
Well, one could hope.
Our subreddit is dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We've got one message of the day to get to today from Michael in Yokohama. Thank you for arigato gozaimasu, Michael, for writing in. He says, in regards to the Switch not selling in Australia, one possible scenario is that people don't know where they're available. For example, after my son was unable to get the Switch in pre-sales online from Nintendo, he didn't think he'd be able to get it at all. But we went to a large electronics store downtown, and they had a sign outside saying that all their pre-orders were sold out. I then tried our local department store, and they had it! Papa Ichiban! Like him, many of his friends gave up when the bigger places declared it sold out. They didn't think smaller local places had a chance to have it. So sometimes it just pays to keep looking around.
Yeah, I think that's like the pre-order for me a month ago, and I pre-ordered all the places I wanted to pre-order it were sold out. And I thought, well, I guess I'm not getting one. And then someone said, well, have you tried GameStop? And I went, oh, GameStop, maybe, I don't know. And I went and checked and they had plenty. So I got mine that way. But also on the day of, people were finding them at like a Sears.
Yeah.
But I'm like, a Sears? Are you kidding me?
There was an old Intellivision next to him, just still sitting on the shelf.
Which is kind of awesome in its own way. But yeah, like this is the cycle. The bigger question is, are Australians just not aware of that cycle? Do they just give up? Not
it's also way more expensive. We found this out in the post show yesterday. $469 is the price. It's pretty expensive.
No, listen, those Australians, they have my sympathy. When I found out Grand Theft Auto 5 was like $105 down there, it made me think, well, I guess I'm not moving to Australia for my video game needs.
I feel like, Scott, you and I should board a plane with a suitcase full of Nintendo Switches and just fly to Sydney.
Tom, we may need it just for the battery life to get there.
So. Yeah, exactly.
At least five or, let's see, actually we need about 10 Switches to get to game the entire trip.
Then we could recharge them when we get there and, you know, and make Peter Wells and Raj Dayut's life much better.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. Hey, everybody. Thank you for supporting Scott Johnson. He does lots of things besides the show. Like what, Scott?
Well, I appreciate everyone's support all the time. And I love being on the show. But if people would like to find what I'm doing outside of it or in concert with it, I might say, you can find me at Scott Johnson on Twitter and, of course, frogpants.com, the newly redesigned frogpants.com. Simple to find, easy to look at, and really easy to find what you're looking for. So go
easy to find, hard to master.
There you go.
The new frogpants.com. Go check it out. Hey, everybody. If you're in Los Angeles, quick note that I'll be doing a book launch for my new novel. By the way, I have a novel, Tom Merritt's Pilot X, on March 18th at Book Soup on Sunset Boulevard at 4 p.m. So if you're in L.A., meet up. DTNS meetup at the book signing. March 18th, 4 p.m., Sunset Boulevard, Book Soup. Thanks, everybody who supports this show. We could not do it without you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Keep it coming. If you get value from the show, we're asking for five cents a show. That's $1 a month at patreon.com/DTNS. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Justin Robert Young. Talk to you then.
Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
That was a good show.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I like talking about that new stuff, the different stuff.
Yeah, tight, succinct.
Yeah.
New, cutting edge.
The all new DTNS. Now with flavor crystals.
That's right.
DTNS melts in your mouth, not in your hands.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, Roger.
Sometimes, no. Sorry. Sometimes it does work. Sometimes it doesn't.
Melts in your ears, not in your hands.
That's pretty good.
Significant others is the top, followed by
All caps? Tied with. I mean, it's all caps all the time. Oh, in quotes. Nice.
With quotes. Is that a server in your pocket? Switched on, just popped in. AI can show you the world.
AI could show you.
I'm amazed no one used the, was it a Quantum Leap? What's his name? Ziggy, the computer. Yeah. Tag it with a tiger. The Diamond Rio home and automation.
That was funny.
Netflix and
Switch. Kicking myself because Eileen had a Diamond Rio and we got rid of it. Because we both got better. She got an iPod and I got a Creative Nomad. And we're like, well, this thing barely stores any MP3s. Let's get rid of it. And then I'm like, later, I'm like.
The CD player size Nomad clam looking thing?
Wait, what?
Well, Creative Labs made like a, it looked like.
I had the
like
Creative Nomad, which was like a gray oblong thing. It stored 128. Okay.
Somewhere here, Nomad, they had another model of the Nomad that was about the size of a Discman, and it had 4 gigabytes, and it was...
Oh, gosh, no. Mine wasn't that. I didn't have that high level, and it didn't have 4 gigabytes on it.
I had one of the first portable MP3 players that was just basically a CD player. You burnt the MP3s on it.
I think mine had 128 megabytes.
There was new products are hatching out of Nest. Switches get stitches. Netflix and Kill. I'm not sure about that one. AI can show you the world.
You're playing games, right? You're killing monsters, and then you're also Netflix. That's
switched on. Is that a server in your pocket? Netflix and Switch. AI can show you the world.
AI can show you. Well, we might get sued though. If I can keep singing, that is. One of these days, I want to be a good enough singer that I can be blocked by Content ID.
Oh, darn it. I thought you were going to say, goal. Try out for the now canceled and defunct American Idol.
The Voice. That's the new hipness.
Oh, yeah, The Voice. You can do The Voice.
That's a long voice.
So, AI can show the world is leading the pack at this moment.
It'll guarantee that your wife watches you sing, Tom, because she likes The Voice.
Yeah, that's the only time she'll watch me. Mm-hmm, and then she'll vote me down. I mean, the thing about The Voice is you have to actually get picked by the coaches to get voted down. You don't get voted right from the beginning. So, AI could show you the world. AI can show you the world. Yeah.
Yeah. What? Is that a yes or no, Scott?
I like it. It's dad jokey as heck. I say go for it.
I can show you the world. I used to find that very annoying in comic books when they would write a word bubble for I as they get like punched or something happens to them and the characters
that were getting punched found it annoying that you were annoyed while they were getting punched. They're like, look, man, I'm getting punched right here.
Enjoy.
By the way, that was my favorite. Oh, go ahead.
I was like, enjoy the stories we wrote out for you and risk our lives, our fictional lives, every month.
My favorite twist in Logan was the connection to that comic book. I won't say anything else for those who didn't see it, but I love that.
Oh, yeah, that was funny. It's in the trailer, part of it, anyway.
It is. I just like how it was handled. Like it was a... The whole time I'm thinking, why are they following this? And then I was like, oh, because the kids are in charge. That didn't spoil anything, right?
I don't know. I mean, saying there's a movie spoils it for some people. So, yeah, I didn't know there was a Logan movie. Thanks a lot. I wanted to be surprised when I showed up and bought a ticket without knowing what movie I was seeing.
Logan is Wolverine. Spoiler.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I can't believe it.
Just don't tell me that Patrick Stewart's in it. Oh, man.
Forget it then. It's all.
Did he die? No. In the previous X-Men movie, he actually came back because the timeline was changed. What? Mm-hmm. Spoil, spoil, spoil.
See, and Ian makes a good point. He says, if it's a spoiler, you would have had to watch the first 30 minutes of the movie to be spoiled by it. So at that point, you're not being spoiled because you've watched 30 minutes of the movie. So, I don't know.
Spoilers. They continue.
I guess you could get 30 minutes into the movie and go, oh, that's what Scott meant. Now I'm spoiled.
But science has told us that you'll actually enjoy it more because I gave you a little tidbit, a little something, a little nugget. And you'll go, oh, and you'll like it. Even though you think you won't, you will. Science. Prove it you can't.
Prove it you can't.
I hate that.
I do too. It became kind of a thing on TMS because some guy, I was getting some tweets where there was like, tell me this, prove it you can't. Like no punctuation or anything. It was just prove it you can't. And it became this thing on the show. Anytime there was something that came up that was even the least bit controvertible, I could just say, we could yell, prove it you can't. It is still one of my pet peeves though. I freaking hate it when people say it and mean it. If you mean it ironically, fine. I'll laugh. It's pretty funny. But Roger is the producer of this show. Prove it you can't.
That's why I'm going to build my impossibly huge catapult and or trebuchet. Because the bucket's just made for people like that.
Oh. Prove it you can't. See, I can do it to that too. That's the best part.
I don't believe you're real.
Prove it. You can't.
Big news.
That's for my second catapult.
Doing two catapults?
Fig news.
Fig news.
You should use the same catapult, just you have a different bucket for it.
Prove it, you can't. See, like, just say it for everything, and after a while, all you want to do is take your hand, form it into a fist, and punch someone. You're right. I can't prove it, but I can punch it.
Yeah, I can definitely punch it.
Let's not get violent, Roger.
Let's build a trebuchet for real, though. I always that always impresses me, and I always feel like it's a project. This is the one thing I'll never do. I may skydive one day. I may ski down the backside of Everest for all I know. Like, there's a million things I could do, but will I ever build a trebuchet out of wood? Probably not.
Daily Tech News Show is powered by its audience.
Wasn't there like a famous documentary about someone building a trebuchet in their backyard?
I don't know.
Well, you know, people build those pneumatic cannons to shoot pumpkins for the pumpkin contest. You know what they say, how far you can lob a pumpkin.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm sure there are people who make scale models of them, working small table size models. Like, that sounds all awesome. I'm just trying to think if there's one thing in this world I wish I'll do, but I probably never will. It's build a trebuchet. Don't know why. It's a little obscure and weird, but I will probably never do it.
I want you to be that guy who builds a trebuchet in his backyard.
Okay.
Be that guy.
What will I launch with it? What shall I launch with it?
A new book.
Can I launch Tom's new book after Pilot X from the trebuchet?
Yeah. Put it inside the little model plane and launch it and see if it stays in the air.
Can your new book be called Trebuchet X? Is that all right?
Trebuchet pilot.
Nova, Secrets of Lost Empire's Medieval Siege, built a trebuchet.
Oh, all right.
There you go. Maybe that's what
you could buy. You could buy like a 50-pound bag of Skittles or something, shove it in there with the bag open and fling out and do like the commercials, raining Skittles.
Yeah,
a rainbow. Except there'll be more like hailstones on people and they'll be screaming in pain.
Yeah, it'll be a rainbow of fruity flavors.
And pain and suffering.
Taste the rainbow of pain.
I taste it.
You
it
mean the painbow?
Oh.
The only thing black and blue are the bruises those Skittles gave me.
Actually, if you want to get stained black and blue, if you have a friend who's either just getting out of a hot tub, a shower, or a pool or something, and you throw a handful of fruity pebbles on them, and it doesn't matter how quickly they rinse those fruity pebbles off, they will be stained for about a week.
Why?
Because the food coloring agent in those fruity pebbles is just hardcore, man.
Really hard. Wow.
Yeah. Which says a lot about what you're doing to your guts when you eat them, but
nothing. It says nothing about what you're doing to your guts. Yeah.
All right, it doesn't say anything. It just says...
Do you worry that your guts are going to be colored?
How would you know?
That's a good point. No, I guess I'm not.
Sorry, I mean, a little bit of Bill Merritt came out just then.
Oh, no, but I'm wondering. It's like they wouldn't really be a color because there's no light.
I can't be alone when I say the words, I like it when a little bit of Bill Merritt comes out. I like that.
That was totally channeling my dad just then. I'm sorry.
Prove it.
Prove it. You can't.
Well, plus he was a food scientist.
Yes, and that was his pet peeve, was people saying like, it's a chemical, so it's bad. And he's like, some chemicals are bad and some are good. I like the chemical sugar. That's a really good chemical. It tastes great.
Did he have, so was there any controversy in your house growing up about red M&Ms and all
oh
that?
Oh my gosh. He was working on a project when they banned Red 5 and he just cursed the FDA for years because his project got ruined because of that ban.
There's nothing wrong with it.
That was when he would grumble, you know, oh yeah, inject a rat with 10 times its weight of anything, it'll get cancer.
I love that, though. I think that's such a great perspective.
Well, you know, and also those lab rats are kind of, they're bred to be very susceptible to getting cancer, period.
And don't get me wrong, he didn't want to use unsafe additives. He was not trying to be irresponsible. He was a food scientist. It was that he felt like, you know, the wrong method was taken in evaluating a lot of this stuff.
Banning it.
Would he argue like red number five is no different than green number 10 or some other thing? Like, or was it because
he just didn't think that they had shown that it was harmful. He's like, I don't understand.
Because all the urban legends as kids that matter are things like Tylenol tainted or there's razor blades.
Yeah, no, that was real. Like there was Tylenol that had been poisoned, right? Like they found actual arsenic in Tylenol. It wasn't widespread, but that's why we got childproof tops.
Right. But I guess that's my point is I think our childhood culture was so inundated with food myths that we ran with it. And in a way, still part of me. Like I still think of that stuff all the time.
Me too. And the worst thing is that it's mixed with truth, right? There were some harmful things out there, but it was hard to tell which was with because of all the fake news.
Yeah. It's like sharp like Twinkies. Red scares.
We called it urban legends red back scare. Then. Urban legend.
It's like communism and shark attacks, Tom.
You know, I'm really surprised that my dad never called it the Red Scare. He probably did. I just don't remember.
I love that.
He was really, I'm pretty sure I've told this before, he was really a fan of aspartame as a sweetener because he was working on diet drinks a lot. And he thought aspartame has showed a lot of promise as something that actually tasted sweet but didn't have any calories. But he also was intolerant. He was one of the people that it caused gastric distress on.
So oh, no.
Like, he still... and. God bless him. He was a scientist. He's like, no, it still should be used, you know, just as long as people who know it should be labeled that it's sweetened with aspartame. So people like me don't drink it. He's like, but there's no reason not to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That stuff makes me dizzy. I can't drink any diet beverages.
Makes you dizzy. Interesting.
Yeah. Like aspartame. What's the other one? Aspartame or?
There's the new one everyone's all into is the
stevia.
Stevia stuff. Yeah.
That stuff tastes nasty.
I actually like stevia. Really? You don't like it?
I like the person named Stevia, but not the
Stevia food. Rogers.
It just tastes weird Captain to me. Sweetener. I know it's supposed to taste sweet or something, but it's not it tastes sweet, but it tastes like an afterthought. Like just overall it's just ugh.
That's a great description. Tastes like an afterthought. I like that. I don't like, I'm kind of off pop generally, so no more.
It's a good idea. Yeah. I did lose weight and I gained it back in eating other stuff.
That's a problem.
Yeah, sugar, so much sugar and soda.
Yeah.
And I love root beer, so it's double dangerous for me.
Do you have a favorite brand? What was your favorite brand?
Dad's.
Oh yeah. Dad's is good.
Dad's really good.
Worked on Dad's root beer a little bit.
Oh, no way. Dude, shut up. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Your dad worked on Dad's root beer.
So Dad's root beer was made, like, when he worked as a food scientist, did he work for a specific company or?
Yeah, he started working for Pet Milk. Then Pet Milk was bought by IC Industries, and IC Industries owned PepsiCo Bottlers. So they created Contech Laboratories, which was a research arm of Pet, to kind of work with all of their products. And so Dad's was one of the products that PepsiCo bottlers made, including they made Bubble Up and Dad's.
Oh, but I remember Bubble Up.
I can't remember the others. There were a couple others in there.
Actually, you know, this might be kind of weird to me because Faygo has such a bad name recognition. because you immediately associate with ICP. But their root beer is really good.
Yeah. No, Faygo's all right. We had some juggalos sent us some Faygo for TMS to test it because we were, you know, having all these stories about
like literally juggalos.
Yeah, the actual juggalos, guys that paint their faces and go to that thing every year. What's it called?
The Gathering of the Juggalos.
Yeah,
that's
it's in Cave in Rock,
right?
Illinois or something.
And it was fine. It was like fine soda.
It was good. It's just because they sprayed on everyone for some reason.
Yeah,
it's off. It's mentioned in a lot of their songs for some reason.
And then Ski is a soda from Southern Illinois.
Ski?
Illinois. SKI. Ski.
Interesting.
One thing I've always wanted to try, I'd never had a chance, is cherry wine.
Whoa.
You don't have to take your clothes off to have a good time, Roger.
No, well, that's the thing. It's not an alcoholic beverage. It's a soda, but it's sold in like Northern. North or South Carolina, one of the Carolinas.
You don't have to take your
Florida. You're right. You don't have to take your clothes off.
You can just dance and party all night and drink some cherry wine. Uh-huh.
But taking your clothes off does kind of liven the atmosphere.
Cherry wine won't make you take your clothes off. That's, I think, the point of the song.
Yeah.
Because it's non-alcoholic.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We're done reminiscing about soda.
Clearly the best post show in the history of this program.
Clearly. We will be back to try and top it tomorrow. See you then.